Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, you know, Hollywood, Los Angeles, show business, is known for egos. You've heard that. But it's not our exclusive bailiwick. It's not our exclusive problem. I'm proud to announce. The top two leaders of the National Weather Service announced their resignations this week, 2 days after the director of the National Hurricane Center blasted his federal bosses for attempting to diminish the identity of both the Weather Service and the Hurricane Center. What? What would that be about? You know, the Hurricane Center isn't important this time of year, is it? And to absorb their budgets. Ah. David Johnson, who served as the director of the National Weather Service since January 2004, and John Jones, served as deputy director, retiring on the same day, on June 30th. The Weather Service controls the Hurricane Center. The Weather Service is in turn controlled by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA. NOAA has, according to the Washington Post, recently been under fire for its efforts to diminish the name recognition of the Weather Service and the Hurricane Center and to promote its own name recognition instead. NOAA, you see, ladies and gentlemen, wants to be better known than the Hurricane Center, even though if you say the name, it basically sounds like the part of the federal government that builds arcs. I don't know. Get a better name first, then get some name recognition would be my recommendation. But anyway, NOAA wants to be better known than the Hurricane Center and the Weather Bureau. I wish it luck. I really do. Speaking of weather, speaking of disasters, ladies and gentlemen, the congressional delegation from the state of Kansas wants President Bush to wave his magic wand so that the federal government will cover 100% of the reconstruction costs from tornado damage from the recent tornado in Greensburg, Kansas. Where are the people who, like they said of New Orleans, why do you folks live below sea level, a place where they have hurricanes? Why do folks live in an area of the country called Tornado Alley and then expect the federal government to pay? FEMA normally covers 75% of costs, with state and local governments required to match. The Kansas congressional delegation says to Bush he should make an exception for Greensburg because the damage there was, quote, truly catastrophic, unquote. Unlike, say, New Orleans. FEMA covered 90% of recovery costs from fierce winter storms. Why do you live someplace where they have winter storms in Kansas earlier this year? The agency covered 100% of cleanup costs after 9/11 and is not, that is to say, we've talked about this on the air, the federal requirement for a 10% match for disaster reconstruction was waived after 9/11 and after Hurricane Andrew as well, but it's not been waived for New Orleans. And yet, Kansas wants it waived for the tornado. And following up on last week, Saddleback Church has responded to a number of conservative Christians in the United States after they condemned the church's leader, purpose-driven author Pastor Rick Warren, for not disciplining Rupert Murdoch over his plans to run porn channels in Europe. Chris Roseborough, head of the U.S.-based Christian Accountability Network, said Pastor Warren should, quote, call Murdoch to repentance and or put him out of the church for having porn channels on British Sky Television, which he controls, Murdoch. David Curzon, chief of staff at Saddleback Church in California, says that Murdoch was not a member of Saddleback Church Rick Warren's, Pastor Rick Warren's church located in Orange County, California. He'd never even attended a service there. This answers a question some of us had after last week's criticism of him by Chris Roseborough. Curzon said any attempt on the part of Pastor Warren to, quote, exercise biblical authority he doesn't have would be presumptuous and inappropriate. Quote, with regard to his obligations to admonish Mr. Murdoch, he has no jurisdiction over him. Even if Mr. Murdoch were a member of Saddleback, any spiritual counsel would be private and personal, not public. So Rupert goes unadmonished, unbowed, and uncriticized by Saddleback Church and presumably Pastor Rick Warren, go ahead from Rick Warren to Rupert Murdoch, and hello, welcome to Little Show.
I can't talk, I gotta go. Don't call me back, I won't get the door. Got to focus on the job, cause I got a new job. Climbing the walls, I was grinding my teeth.
To the crowds of mine.
purpose-driven absolution is what I was looking for. From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of Le Show. And now, news from outside the bubble. From the Times of London, owned by Rupert Murdoch, in the remote border district of Ali Khail in eastern Afghanistan, Afghan security forces are now pitted against Pakistan. Clashes between the two neighbors, two of the West's biggest allies in the war on terror. That's a good war, isn't it? Began last Sunday morning when Pakistani forces fired on an Afghan post at a strategic point on the border. The fighting is the most serious of its kind for years. Since then, there's been a buildup of forces in the contested zone as hundreds of regular Afghan soldiers from the Thunder Corps, who had been fighting against the Taliban, have deployed to reinforce the beleaguered border with Pakistan. Pakistan has recently started building a security fence in selected areas of the border, ostensibly to halt the flow of insurgents. This has provoked more Afghan wrath. The Kabul government does not recognize the border drawn up by the British in 1893. The demarcation, the Durand Line, was intended to divide warlike Pashtun tribes who were hostile to British influence. I'm telling you, ladies and gentlemen, all the problems in the world today are because of lines drawn on maps by the Brits. Now Afghanistan sees the security... That was me talking. Now Afghanistan sees the security fence as the de facto consolidation of a border dividing them from tribal areas in Pakistan that they claim as their own. So far, NATO and American-led forces have kept their forces away from the area of fighting, though an Afghan commander says he had seen an eight-man team of Americans move forward to observe the clashes until they, too, were shelled and withdrew. The fighting has sparked anti-Pakistani sentiment among the Afghan border tribes at a time when every foreign player trying to stabilize Afghanistan is dependent on the two neighbors cooperating. And, wait, there's more. More news outside the bubble. NATO has promised to review its military tactics in Afghanistan amid warnings from senior Afghan politicians that the growing number of civilian deaths in operations against the Taliban risks provoking a major backlash, commanding. General John Craddock, NATO's supreme commander, said in Washington the alliance understands civilian casualties cost it credibility among local people. Well, that's never too late. Quote, every time that happens, someone walks away an Afghan citizen with a bad feeling towards either NATO or the United States, he said. Last week, NATO officials were celebrating the death in a gunfire of Mullah Dadullah. It sounds like a cartoon character, but it's not. He's the Taliban's most feared and reviled military commander. But members of the Afghan parliament said many civilians were killed during clashes with insurgents, particularly in airstrikes. Khalid Farooqi, a member of parliament once closely allied with Gulbuddin Hekmatyar, a notorious Afghan warlord who is now allied with the Taliban, says, quote, if they bomb a whole village just to get one insurgent, they will create more enemies for themselves. And once the people stand against them, it will be very hard to control the situation. Unquote. At least 21 civilians died earlier this month in an airstrike called in by U.S. Special Forces in a battle with militants in the province. It's going good. It's going very well indeed. Another Afghan MP says his cousin's house in a mosque were hit about 6 weeks ago in an airstrike that killed five people. They will never defeat the Taliban this way, he complained. They will lose, and the matter of their defeat is just killing Afghanistan. As an Afghan, as a Muslim, I ask the British, the Dutch, and the Canadians, please do construction work and bring us security instead of doing all the bombing. Yeah, but construction work is hard. Another senator in the Afghan parliament, says NATO and American forces cannot bring peace and stability when they remain so reliant on military power. He was among members of the upper house who passed a motion this month calling for a ceasefire negotiations with the insurgents and a date for the withdrawal of foreign troops. Well, that sends the wrong message. And from the British newspaper The Telegraph, you know that Tony Blair had a goodbye kind of hug fest with George Bush in Washington this week and then went off to Iraq to say, I have no regrets. From the British newspaper The Telegraph, Blair's successor, Gordon Brown, is prepared to risk the future of the special relationship with the United States by reversing Tony Blair's support for the Iraq War. Such is the information that has been passed to President George W. Bush. He's been warned by White House officials to expect an announcement on British troop withdrawals from the new Prime Minister Brown during his first 100 days in office. What can Brown do for you? It would be designed to boost the new Prime Minister's popularity in the opinion polls, where Tony Blair, like George W. Bush, is experiencing new dimensions in tanking. The president recently discussed, according to the British newspaper, with a senior White House advisor how to handle the fallout from the expected loss of Washington's main ally in Iraq. An ally of Brown's called for an even quicker withdrawal of British troops. Nigel Griffiths, a former minister, said, quote, we should get out of Iraq as soon as it is practicable. We should consult the Iraqi government, but they cannot have a veto. This cannot be delayed, unquote. He spoke out as Brown is preparing to use an early trip to Iraq to reassess Britain's role and to accelerate the withdrawal. Senior figures in the National Security Council, the Pentagon, and the State Department have expressed fears about the new British Prime Minister. They believe cordial relations between the two leaders will be at an end if the incoming premier plays, quote, gesture politics, unquote, over Iraq. One senior official told The Telegraph, quote, there's a sense of foreboding. We don't know if he'll be there when we need him. We expect a gesture that will greatly weaken the United States government's position, unquote, i.e. withdrawal. President Bush's aides fear that Brown will boost Democrats' demands for a timetable, leaving the president more isolated. The number of British troops in Iraq is currently being cut from 7,100 at the start of the year to 5,500, but there's no official timetable for full withdrawal. It all looks good. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen, copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And there's more. Not quite bubblicious, but you may have heard about this. What do the foreign ministers from Islamic countries think the United States should do in Iraq? Well, in public at least, they've called on all international forces to pull out of Iraq, ASAP. That sends the wrong message, doesn't it? The joint declaration came at the end of a three-day meeting in Islamabad. Oh, Islam's bad now? Foreign ministers from the 57-member Organization of the Islamic Conference. It also said Iraq should not be split among Sunni-Shiite lines. And it made no reference to Pervez Musharraf's suggestion that a UN-mandated Muslim force should be deployed to Iraq. The ministers denounced the growing trend of Islamophobia. They strongly condemned the global menace of terrorism. So they covered all the bases. How are things going in Iraq? According to a correspondent for the Independent newspaper in Baghdad, who's had an interview with the oil minister of Iraq, he says Iraq's only revenue is from the 1.6 million barrels a day of crude oil. Every day, saboteurs blow up Iraqi oil pipelines and oil ministry teams try to repair them in an endless war. Right now, the saboteurs have perhaps temporarily the upper hand. Quote, it is as bad as it has ever been, says Dr. Hussein Shahristani, the Iraq oil minister. If we can protect the pipeline, The main problem is the pipeline that takes crude oil from the oil fields in northern Iraq runs through notoriously dangerous territory between Kirkuk and Baiji. Quote, as soon as we finish a repair, they plant another improvised explosive device. The pipe is hundreds of miles long and runs through a hostile area where insurgents are very active, he says. So, good news on the oil front. And from McClatchy newspapers, U.S. Embassy employees in Iraq are growing increasingly angry over what they say are inadequate security precautions in the heavily fortified, apparently not heavily fortified enough, Green Zone, where recent mortar and rocket attacks have claimed the lives of six people, including two U.S. citizens. In spite of the attacks, embassy employees complain most staff members still sleep in trailers that one described as tin cans that offer virtually no protection from rocket or mortar fire. God, almost as if they're New Orleanians. New Orleanians. The government has refused to harden the roofs because of the cost, says one employee. Well, that's the best excuse I've heard. How about the formaldehyde in there? FEMA is now inspecting FEMA trailers for formaldehyde fumes. Never too late, department. A second official in Baghdad says it's criminally negligent not to reduce the size of the embassy staff, which a year ago was estimated at 1,000 in face of the increasing attacks. Blamed the administration's failure to respond on concerns that doing so might undermine support for the Iraq policy. Quoting the employee, what responsible person and responsible government would ask you to put yourself at risk like that? We don't belong here. They're not going to send us home because it's going to be another admission of failure. Unquote. Embassy employees have been ordered not to talk about security concerns with reporters. Three did. With McClatchy newspapers, all three asked not to be identified for fear they'd lose their jobs. Who would fire them over? The officials also complained important security precautions appeared to have been set aside during highly publicized official visits like that of Senator John McCain. The embassy at that time lifted a requirement that bulletproof vests and helmets be worn at all times. When a rocket landed outside the U.S. embassy while Dick Cheney visited, no warning sirens were sounded. Quote, where were the sirens then? One official asked. We don't belong here and people are afraid to say it, unquote. Official spokesmen have rebuffed requests for information about the embassy, citing security concerns. In the past several months, security in the Green Zone has deteriorated. Last week, Senator Olympia Snowe, Republican of Maine, told reporters after a visit to Baghdad the conditions inside the Green Zone were, quote, infinitely worse, unquote, than she'd experienced during a visit last year. Quote, I was concerned then. The Green Zone, ladies and gentlemen, so-called because, you know, I guess they have solar panels. And finally, from overseas. And also on the subject of the new Iraq, Iraq faces the distinct possibility of collapse and fragmentation. This just in? Yeah. From the UK foreign policy think tank, Chatham House. Chatham Up House. Its report says the Iraqi government is now largely powerless and irrelevant in many parts of the country. It says there's not one war, but many local civil wars.
Well, the enemy, that's what the enemy wants.
Which enemy? And urges a major shift in U.S. and British strategy, such as consulting Iraq's neighbors. Sounds like the Baker-Hamilton report. More from the Chatham House report. Well, the British Foreign Office, in response, says the security conditions, although grim in places, grim, that's a cheerful adjective, it varies across Iraq. Most insurgent attacks remain concentrated in just four of Iraq's 18 provinces, containing less than 42% of the population, says the Foreign Office. Less than 42. Would that be 41? Iraq has come a long way in a short time, says the Foreign Office spokesperson. The Chatham House report is written by Gareth Stansfield, identified as a Middle East expert. I think the woods are full of those these days. It's unremittingly bleak, according to the BBC's diplomatic correspondent. Stansfield argues that the breakup of Iraq is becoming increasingly likely. In large parts of the country, the Iraqi government is powerless. Rival factions are struggling for local supremacy. The report from the British think tank is called, quote, "Accepting Realities in Iraq." Well, good luck with that. He says that although al-Qaeda is challenged in some areas by local leaders who do not welcome such intervention, we've seen reports that the Sunnis in certain areas in the West are organizing against al-Qaeda in Iraq. But Stansfield says there is a clear momentum behind its activity. And Iraq's neighbors have a greater capacity to affect the situation in Iraq than either Britain or the United States. Well, we'll just have to send more something. We'll send more something. The LA Dog Trainer reports today that Iraq is now a source of funding for the al-Qaeda training camps in Pakistan. Switcheroo, babe. Speaking of Pakistan, what's the haps with our friend? The United States is continuing to make large payments of $1 billion a year to Pakistan for what it calls reimbursements to the country's military for conducting counterterrorism efforts along the border with Afghanistan, even though Pakistan's president decided 8 months ago to slash those patrols. The monthly payments, called coalition support funds, are not widely advertised. They're intended to reimburse Pakistan's military for the cost of the operations that they're now not conducting. Some American military in the region have recommended that the money be tied to Pakistan's performance in pursuing al-Qaeda.
We had an accountability moment.
American officials have been surprised by the speed at which both the Taliban and al-Qaeda have gained strength in the past year in Pakistan. Bush administration officials say no such connection between money and performance is being considered. What are they trying to treat Pakistanis like elementary school children? Have to prove they're doing the job? The Pakistani military, according to the International Herald Tribune, is often looking the other way when Taliban fighters retreat across the border into Pakistan from Afghanistan, ignoring calls from American spotters to intercept them. There's at least one American report that Pakistani security forces have fired weapons in support of Taliban fighters attacking Afghan positions. That's a good place to be over there, that border area. And British media issued fresh warnings about Pakistan this week, saying, quote, "Fractious, violent, and unstable Pakistan is stumbling toward the nightmare scenario of a failed state." Isn't that the kind of place that we're trying to keep Iraq from becoming, so they don't become a haven for? Yes. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Thank you very much for noticing.
I can't.
This is Le Show, and now it's time for the Apologies of the Week.
We're so sorry.
I'm pleased to be in receipt of a kind of an electronic brochure for something called, for a webinar, a web seminar called Sorry Works. Sorry Works strengthens doctor-patient relationships, increases patient-family satisfaction, and reduces medical errors, especially repeat medical errors. Learn all about the apology and disclosure movement through this web seminar. Many hospitals, medical practices, and insurers are still using deny and defend practices and cover-ups after medical errors to limit lawsuits, when in fact this approach angers patients and actually increases the chances of litigation being pursued. Sorry Works is a movement that is literally sweeping the healthcare and insurance worlds. By disclosing and apologizing after adverse medical events, hospitals and insurers are lowering lawsuits. So, apologize to avoid lawsuits, ladies and gentlemen. From the Sorry Works people. Deadline Las Vegas. Casino dealers at Wynn Las Vegas voted by almost a 3-1 margin in favor of unionizing despite an impassioned 11th-hour plea by company chairman Steve Wynn. Towels, who told his workers on the eve of the election, it had been a mistake to implement a controversial change, including management people in the tip pools for dealers for the first time. Wynn spoke to dealers Thursday in a group meeting for about 20 minutes. "I got it wrong. I hurt you and I apologize," Wynn said. "Sometimes people with good intentions make mistakes." I don't know if he was referring to himself, but let's assume he was. Deadline Chicago, New York Yankees slugger Jason Giambi says Major League Baseball should apologize to the public for its widespread performance-enhancing drug problem. Claiming he's been tested for performance-enhancing drugs more often than anyone, Giambi told USA Today that the apology is long overdue. "I was wrong for doing that stuff. We should have apologized long time ago. Made sure we had a rule in place and gone forward. Steroids and all of that was part of history. But it was a topic everybody wanted to avoid. Nobody wanted to talk about it." Sorry Works. The food company that makes Mars bars has been forced to change its chocolate recipes, in England at least, and ditch the use of animal products after a backlash from vegetarians. Mars has admitted it made a mistake by switching a key ingredient to one that came from the stomachs of slaughtered calves. Still listening? Thousands of consumers complained after the company admitted it was using animal rennet, the enzymes from the stomachs of livestock, to make what they use, make whey used in their chocolate products. Britain's 3 million vegetarians and some religious groups could no longer eat popular brands such as Mars Bar, Snickers, Galaxy, and Maltesers. Fiona Dawson, managing director of Mars United Kingdom, has ordered all the recipes to be changed. "We made a mistake," she said. "We apologize." Deadline Meriden, Connecticut, State Democratic Chairwoman Nancy DiNardo has joined a growing number of party members asking one of their own to resign, citing a, quote, "proud to be white" email that he forwarded to more than a dozen friends. Patsy Papandrea, a Democratic State Central Committee member for 27 years, has apologized for forwarding the message. He said he did not read all of it before sending it, believing it was a joke. The email actually includes offensive terms for blacks, Jews, Hispanics, Asians, and Arabs. It is written from the perspective of a white person addressing minorities and raises perceived contradictions and double standards surrounding race. Papandrea said he did not mean to offend everyone. He has issued a sincere apology and believes those pushing him to resign are engaging in gutter politics. Deadline Mandeville, Louisiana. If you look at the yearbook for 1 St. Tammany Parish Elementary School, that's on the north shore of Lake Pontchartrain, you won't see all of the students. Parents said portrait shots of special ed students with learning disabilities were left out of Pontchartrain Elementary's yearbook. Instead, there are candid shots of the students. Special ed students who are considered gifted were included. The principal has apologized for the omission, and she's working to rectify the problem. Alberto Gonzalez continues his apology tour. He had a a session with U.S. attorneys, a private meeting in San Antonio. He faced sharp criticism from many of them. He apologized for the controversy over the firings of the prosecutors. That'll do him a lot of good. Senator Sam Brownback of Kansas was campaigning in Wisconsin, drawing boos and groans when he used a football analogy to talk about the need to focus on families. Quote, "This is fundamental blocking and tackling. This is your line in football. If you don't have a line, how many passes can Peyton Manning complete? Greatest quarterback maybe in NFL history," he said. Wrong team to mention in Wisconsin. Home of the Packers. Realizing what he had said, the Kansas Republican slumped at the podium, actually at the lectern, put his head in his hands. Quote, "That's really bad," he said. "That will go down in history. I apologize." His apology brought a smattering of applause and laughter. He said, then, trying to recover, former Packer Bart Starr may be the greatest of all time, but the crowd was still restless. "Let's take Brett Favre, then," he said. "The Packers are great. I'm sorry. How many passes does he complete without a line?" yelled more than one person. "All of them." Movie star Sylvester Stallone has apologized to the public and the justice system for illegally possessing vials of human growth hormone and testosterone in Australia. His lawyer told a Sydney court that during a recent visit, Stallone was taking both substances under medical supervision for a medical condition which was not revealed in court. "This is not some back alley bodybuilder dealing covertly with some banned substance in some sort of secret way. This was a legitimate medical condition being treated by doctors of the top-ranking order in the West Coast of the United States." Stallone submitted a written apology. He was not present in court. Said he made a terrible mistake, but he was ignorant of Australian laws. "Never was it my intention to breach the laws, and I realize I should have properly informed myself about your customs," he said in his statement. And finally, on Monday, stand-up comic Patrice O'Neill appeared as a guest on John Gibson's Fox News Channel show, The Big Story, defending recently suspended XM radio shock jocks Opie and Anthony. He said they were just trying to be funny, adding that he had, quote, "a couple of pretty good rape jokes" in his HBO special. Won't quote the example. That's described as a donkey punch joke. I'll leave it at that. When Gibson argued that, quote, "you can't say just anything on the air," even though he aired the joke, O'Neill claimed, "you can say anything you want." Viewers were outraged that Gibson's show, aired at 5 p.m. Eastern, aired O'Neill's remarks. Gibson apologized. Quote, "Patrice said something which had never been aired, and for those of you who heard it, I apologize. There are rules governing this business, and what he said violated those rules. It's my show, and it's my fault, and I apologize sincerely to all and any who were offended," says the author of The War Against Christmas. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Hey, remember the great old days when the Republicans were delighted to be known as the Law and Order Party, and therefore treated with some disdain the excuse, well, everybody else is doing it. I do too. Therefore, it came as a certain amusement to me on one of the Sunday morning yak shows when David Frum, former White House speechwriter, said of Paul Wolfowitz's forced perp walk out of the World Bank this week, that a lot of other people at the World Bank employ their girlfriends. Okay, good defense. The White House has made it clear that President Bush will choose the next World Bank president after Wolfowitz resigned from the post, forced out over the promotion he gave his girlfriend Shahariza. Promotion and generous pay raise. Wolfowitz is the first president. Hey, you know, he's achieved something. He's the first president to be forced out since the World Bank was founded in 1944. Some observers see his demise and the fact the Bush administration failed to save him as proof of the administration's weakened position in the world. Some Europeans are saying the time has come to end the custom by which the U.S. chooses the World Bank's president. Japan said the nationality of Wolfowitz's successor should be decided by the bank itself. But the U.S. has made it clear that President Bush intends to appoint the successor. Bush supposedly was interested in appointing Tony Blair to the job. Blair doesn't want it. Blair. We don't know what Blair wants. Probably to be on the board of some companies. Maybe News Corp. That was rumored about for a while. There was weeks of turmoil and controversy at the World Bank, of course, surrounding Wolfowitz's relationship with his girlfriend and his dealings with her. The bank's 24-member board agreed to his demand that they acknowledge that he had acted, quote, ethically and in good faith, unquote, even after the ethics committee of the bank said he hadn't. He also insisted that the bank board say that mistakes had been made by, quote, a number of individuals, unquote. All of this supposedly to protect his good name.
The wolf's a thinking man's fighter. A warrior's bigger bark. Iraq was what he wanted. Knew nothing of the country. He spoke with iron will. They had no ethnic conflict, and their oil would pay the bill. But his boss was much too wily to be the first to walk the plank. So the wolf got out and ran.
in a land where he once stood with pride. But he'll find his way by the morning light.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, time for News of the Warm. Won't you?
Soft, listen to the warm.
Dateline Bonn, Germany, disoriented by erratic weather, birds are changing migration habits and routes to adjust to warmer winters, disappearing feeding grounds and shrinking wetlands, according to a migration expert. Failure to adapt risks extinction. Birds face starvation when they arrive too early or too late. In the north, some birds have stopped migrating together altogether, leaving them at risk when the next cold winter strikes. And from the Independent of London. No, this is from the Times of London. The oceans are losing the capacity to soak up rising man-made carbon emissions, which is increasing the rate of global warming by up to 30%, scientists now say. Researchers have found that the Southern Ocean, I believe that's the Arctic Ocean, is absorbing an ever-decreasing proportion of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. The excess carbon, which cannot be absorbed by the oceans, will remain in the atmosphere and accelerate global warming, they say. The reduced ability to absorb carbon is thought to be a result of high winds acting on ocean currents, bringing deeper waters that already contain high levels of carbon to the surface. The higher winds are themselves believed to have been caused by climate change due to a combination of changes in the ozone layer and carbon emissions. The scientists from countries including Britain, France, and Germany said their findings marked the first time that one of the world's natural carbon sinks had been shown to be weakened by man's own actions. News of the warm, ladies and gentlemen. This is a long-feared sign of positive feedback, and that's a bad thing. News of the Warm, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Dark clouds, you've been here such a long time. What now? Now that my mind feels so clear and all those worries and misgivings only kept me from the living up. Mind with thoughts unnerving made me feel so undeserving of happiness. But dark clouds, the goose had me now. Dark clouds, guess who's smiling now? I really think it might be me. Smiling now, dark clouds.
Harry, I had no idea you were there.
I've been here for an hour. Ladies and gentlemen, the high-level nuclear waste repository at Yucca Mountain is supposed to open March 2017, but the more likely year is 2021, says Ward Sproat of the Office of Civilian Radioactive Waste Management during a stopover in Pahrump, Nevada. All right, we'll set our calendars, Ward. Thanks so much for the update. That concludes this edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide, throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, around the world also via the internet at two different locations, live and archive whenever you want it on your computer, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, on the giant, mighty 104 in Berlin, on XM and Sirius satellite radios, giant and mighty, available as a free download at www.audible.com/theshow, and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it'd be just like opening Yucca Mountain if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack, a tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego and Pittsburgh desks. Le Show playlist available at harryshearer.com. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.